Marcus Aurelius said, "Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking." Welcome to A Walk Within, a show where I revisit past life experiences invoked by a short story to find newer meanings. I'm Anoop, and today we are starting to explore the story of the man who did not wish to die, a Japanese fairy tale from Yei Theodora Ozaki. This story brought to surface a memory of my past life, which I did not revisit in its entirety for a very long time. To keep things tidy and really allow for parallels to unfold, I decided to divide the story and the accompanying memory into multiple parts. I hope you enjoy it. Let's start with part one of the story once we are back. Long, long ago, there lived a man called Sentaro. His surname meant millionaire, but although he was not so rich as all that, he was still very far removed from being poor. He had inherited a small fortune from his father and lived on this, spending his time carelessly without any serious thoughts of work till he was about 32 years of age. One day, without any reason whatsoever, the thought of death and sickness came to him. The idea of falling ill or dying made him very wretched. "I should like to live," he said to himself, "till I am 500 or 600 years old at least, free from all sickness. The ordinary span of a man's life is very short." He wondered whether it were possible, by living simply and frugally henceforth, to prolong his life as long as he wished. He knew there were many stories in ancient history of emperors who had lived 1,000 years. And there was a princess of Yamato who, it was said, lived to the age of 500. This was the latest story of a very long life record. Sentaro had often heard the tale of a Chinese king named Shinnoshiko. He was one of the most able and powerful rulers in Chinese history. He built all the large palaces and also the famous Great Wall of China. He had everything in the world he could wish for, but in spite of all his happiness and the luxury and the splendor of his court, the wisdom of his counselor and the glory of his reign, he was miserable because he knew that one day he must die and leave it all. When Shinnoshiko went to bed at night, when he rose in the morning, as he went through his day, the thought of death was always with him. He could not get away from it. If only he could find the elixir of life, he would be happy. The emperor at last called a meeting of his courtiers and asked them all if they could not find for him the elixir of life of which he had so often read and heard. One old courtier, Jofuku by name, said that far away across the seas there was a country called Horizon, and that certain hermits lived there who possessed the secret of the elixir of life. Whoever drank of this wonderful draught lived forever. The emperor ordered Jofuku to set out for the land of Horizon to find the hermits and to bring him back a phial of the magic elixir. He gave Jofuku one of his best junks, fitted it out for him, and loaded it with great quantities of treasures and precious stones for Jofuku to take as presents to the hermits. Jofuku sailed for the land of Horizon, but he never returned to the waiting emperor. But ever since that time, Mount Fuji has been said to be the fabled Horizon and the home of the hermits who had the secret of the elixir, and Jofuku has been worshipped as their patron god. Now, Sentaro determined to set out to find the hermits, and if he could, to become one, so that he might obtain the water of perpetual life. He remembered that as a child he had been told that not only did these hermits live on Mount Fuji, but that they were said to inhabit all the very high peaks. So he left his old home to the care of his relatives and started out on his quest. He traveled through all the mountainous regions of the land, climbing to the tops of the highest peaks, but never a hermit did he find. At last, after wandering in an unknown region for many days, he met a hunter. "Can you tell me," asked Sentaro, "where the hermits live who have the elixir of life?"
"No,"
said the hunter.
"I can't tell you where such hermits live. But there is a notorious robber living in these parts. It is said that he is chief of a band of 200 followers."
This odd answer irritated Sentaro very much, and he thought how foolish it was to waste more time in looking for the hermits in this way. So he decided to go at once to the shrine of Jofuku, who is worshipped as the patron god of the hermits in the south of Japan. Sentaro reached the shrine and prayed for 7 days, entreating Jofuku to show him the way to a hermit who could give him what he wanted so much to find. At midnight of the 7th day, as Sentaro knelt in the temple, the door of the innermost shrine flew open and Jofuku appeared in a luminous cloud, and calling to Sentaro to come nearer, spoke thus, "Your desire is a very selfish one and cannot be easily granted. You think that you would like to become a hermit so as to find the elixir of life? Do you know how hard a hermit's life is? A hermit is only allowed to eat fruit and berries and the bark of pine trees. A hermit must cut himself off from the world so that his heart may become as pure as gold and free from every earthly desire. Gradually, after following these strict rules, the hermit ceases to feel hunger or cold or heat, and his body becomes so light that he can ride on a crane or a carp and can walk on water without getting his feet wet. You, Sentaro, are fond of good living and of every comfort. You are not even like an ordinary man, for you are exceptionally idle and more sensitive to heat and cold than most people. You would never be able to go barefoot or to wear only one thin dress in the winter time. Do you think that you would ever have the patience or endurance to live a hermit's life? In answer to your prayer, however, I will help you in another way. I will send you to the country of perpetual life, where death never comes, where the people live forever." There are so many aspects in this part of the story which make it stand out among other fairy tales that I've read so far. The themes of life and death, the unhappiness in prosperity, and a betrayal. We will talk more about the story once this miniseries ends, but before we start walking down memory lane, couple of things. First, as it's been proven scientifically, all memories are highly influenced by the mood of the person. So this is not the exact account of how things happened, but as I remember them. And secondly, as always, I have renamed main characters from the real life for the obvious reasons of privacy. With that said, let's visit this segment of my life. I come from a lower middle class family in a small city in Madhya Pradesh, state of India. By the time I was on the verge of graduating high school in 1999, I was already feeling a lack of achievement in my life. I could not help but feel that a change is needed for me to be successful. At that time, I was working at a desktop publishing establishment and I started imagining that I will end up here forever. These thoughts amplified my restlessness. Fortunately, I enjoyed company of a wide range of friends from different social backgrounds. The conversations among friends were ranging from, "I'm going the engineering route," to, "I'm starting to think about spending more time at family business." Then there was a set of ideas like, "The life is just starting and we'll see what happens." Unfortunately, I could not fit into any of those categories because, 1. Engineering requires a lot of money, which we as a family do not have. 2. My father is a school teacher, so this rules out family business. And 3. I cannot afford to have uncertainty because, as futile as it sounds, I wanted more control over my future. This led to a lot of frustration and uneasiness in me. One afternoon, one of my friends, Rocky, showed up at our house and the conversation quickly took turn to the question, "What is your plan?" He started talking about career, which we used to call career at that time, as a company secretary. He went like this, "It's not that common and it's a really good career path for a big corporate position in any big company." "All right, what does it take?" He spent the next 20 minutes explaining how the course is structured into next 3-4 years. While it was a compelling pitch, he did not answer my real question. So I finally asked him clearly, "How much money are we talking about here to achieve this?" He responded with a serious tone, "I can tell you about the first year. We'll have to enroll in a 6-month course at one of the premier professional academies in Indore and then take Indian Company Secretary Institute's exam. All things considered, you are looking at 8,000 rupees. Then you would also need to live there for those 6-7 months, so you can imagine what would it take." When I shared my incapability of imagination, he continued, "Well, if you live alone, the monthly expenses are going to be around 4 to 5,000 rupees, but if you live with a roommate, this can be shared." That's wonderful. But where would you find a roommate in an unknown city?" "I'm one of those. I'm looking for a roommate. See, I have decided to do this and I'm going no matter what," he responded with a strong conviction. "All right, let's discuss this with our parents and we'll let you know. How much time we have?" inquired my sister, who was also listening to the entire conversation with keen interest. "The batch starts in next 20 days and the next batch will start after 5 months. So basically 15 days. "Okay," responded my sister, and I could see the wheels started turning in her head. In the evening, my sister shared the idea with my parents. In her presentation, to make things easier on everyone, she proactively volunteered to part ways with her personal saving of around 2,000 rupees. For the cause. I joined the conversation in my best behavior, almost as if I was appearing for an interview at one of the biggest companies, ready to showcase my skills and ideas, but remained silent while looking hopefully at my parents. After a lot of back and forth, the initial expense of 8,000 rupees was accounted for, but my father clarified that he cannot afford the monthly expense of around 2,500 rupees. My sister tried to make a case, but my father fixed the budget at 1,300 rupees. I felt defeated. There is no possible way to live in Indore at 1,300 a month. With slumped shoulders, I reached my friend's house next day to share my inability of joining him in our shared journey to success and prosperity. He shared that even his father fixed the monthly budget to 2,000 rupees, resulting into, "I don't know if I'm going or not." While we were sulking over this dilemma, all of a sudden, both of us got an idea. What about a third roommate? It makes sense. We can divide the cost three ways, and this way we can remain under budget and it would be fun. But where will the third roommate come from? Our closest friends, who can be this angelic persona, were all set. They had their career planned by their parents, brothers, sisters, cousins, or even the close neighbors. The next 2 days went crazy on our search. But by the third day, we were so desperate to find a roommate that we started pitching this path to random classmates. One of our classmates overheard us and inquired more about company secretary. Earlier, we ruled him out of the list of potential candidates as he came from a business family who owned a lot of orange groves. We gave him basic rundown, knowing it won't go anywhere, but to our surprise, he said, "Count me in." Me and Rocky looked at each other in shock, but regaining our composure, asked him, "Won't you want to talk to your parents first?" With a smile, he said, "I will talk to them, but you will convince them for me." He truly came from a business family. He correctly assessed the demand and supply of the situation and optimally priced himself to secure profit. Now, here is the thing. For me and my friend, each other's family knew us in details. This is the reason my friend was able to freely talk about career path at my house in front of my sister, and my parents never questioned it. But here is a classmate, a really nice fella who talked very little in the class and comes from a business family. That's it. That's all we know. Now imagine trying to convince a parent to let their offspring go with the strangers to a different city. A parent who is not even aware of your existence before this day. This seemed like an unconquerable mountain. We had two choices. On one side, we have dreams of an independent life in big city, access to a prosperous lifestyle, a shot at being successful. And on the other, a perceived defeated existence in the city that we know everyone in, and a potential bleak future. We chose success and decided to give it our best. Next day in the school, the classmate notified us that our presence is expected at his house at 4 p.m. tomorrow, as his family wants to talk and basically see their son's potential roommates. Given our future was at stake, we nodded and inquired what to expect. He smiled and said, "Don't worry. It's just a normal get-to-know-you conversation with my father before he agrees to let me go." A terrifying yet fair ask. We reached his street and wasn't sure of his exact house, so we asked a couple of folks who were standing on the street in a group of four. Without words, they pointed us to a big multi-storied house near the corner of the street. Me and Rocky glanced at each other, hoping to get some confidence, but it was a mutual failure. We were nervous, sweating, and struggling to knock on the door. Thankfully, the classmate saw us from the window above and rushed to open the door for us. We were invited into their living room and were treated like adults in their request to be seated on the armchairs. This was a living room, brightened by a single large window near the door. Right in front of us, sitting in the middle of a three-seater sofa, was our classmate's father. While I won't describe his physique as towering, but he certainly had a lot of authority in his presence. In other words, it did not calm our nerves. The father sat alone on the sofa, while two uncles, one sitting on a chair placed on the right side of the sofa and the other standing with folded arms. Both had their gaze stuck on me and Rocky, classmate's older brother, who I think was in his late 20s, standing on the left side of his father's throne. We said namaste to all, and while we were settling in our seat, I could see that in the adjacent room, classmate's mother and sisters were settling in their seats too. Our classmate reappeared, and we were served Ruh Afza, a South Asian rose syrup, a product which was first formulated in 1906 in British India, along with some oranges. After placing the snack tray on the table, he returned to stand next to the door of the adjacent room.
"Dear classmate, why are you standing there? Come sit next to me," said his father.
He promptly obliged, and now sitting in the corner of the couch. To our dread, the gaze turned back to us. We grabbed our glasses of Ruh Afza in hopes of finding courage, or you can say, hide behind it.
"So why do you want to go to Indore?"
his father asked. "Since we've been on the tour to recruit a roommate for past few days, both me and Rocky started our pitch rather animatedly." Midway through our pitch, we realized the question was more about assessing if we know what we are going to do rather than finding out what is company secretary. We ended the collective pitch by saying, "This is a good career path." Before we could assess if the pitch worked or not, the next question came out flying.
"Can you tell me about your father and where do you live, son?"
At first, we were not sure who should answer, and there was an awkward 15-second silence, which felt like at least 15 minutes. We both started talking simultaneously and then abruptly stopped talking altogether. I broke the stalemate and continued about my family and where do I live. The father nodded and mentioned some individual's name who I believe was a mutual friend of my father and his. When I clarified my obliviousness to the fact, the father calmly said,
"Oh, that's okay, son."
After that, Rocky talked about his ancestry, and it seemed to be enough information for the father. The sitting uncle then asked, rather abruptly,
"Where would you live?"
Rocky explained that the academy is in the area near Madhumilan Square and MY Hospital, so we would be finding an accommodation there. But it all depends if we are able to secure our admission in this batch. He was better prepared and thinking more clearly than I thought. The uncle and father hunched over towards each other and started talking. I was mentally admiring Rocky's preparation and did not hear anything. Classmate's brother went into the adjacent room and came back with a question.
"What about food? Are you guys going to cook yourself?"
Having never ventured into kitchen to do more than eating, I almost laughed out loud, but controlled myself into smiling and saying, "I don't know how to cook." The sharply focused Rocky responded, "After all the study and then getting ready for the next day's class, we won't have time to cook even if we want to. So we will get our food through some tiffin service, a service where you get a homemade lunch and dinner delivered to you for a monthly fee, a pretty common service in that era for all the outstationed students." His answer worked. Finally, the father said with a smile,
"Sounds like you've done your homework. Please stay together, and classmate is going to join you. You also have to promise that you will not engage in any non-study activities, for the world is full of distractions. Just focus on your studies, and if you run into any trouble, don't worry about it. I have a lot of known people in that area, so no trouble will ever find you. To start with, are you taking anybody with you till you find your accommodation?"
I never even thought beyond finding a roommate, so was stunned. But luckily, Rocky responded, "My brother lives in Indore for his studies, and he will help us find a place while we get admissions in order."
"It's settled then. Whenever you decide to go, just give us a day's notice. Now finish your Ruh Afza."
Did Centauro reach the country of perpetual life? What is a country of perpetual life? Similarly, did the three of us reach Indore to chase our dreams? And what lies ahead on our journey to success? Among other things, you will find these answers in the next episode. Be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to this podcast and follow it on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube to know more. You can find all the details on the show's website, awalkwithinpodcast.com, which is linked in the description. Also, I would really appreciate if you can rate the show either on the podcast platform of your choice or on the website. Before you go, I want to thank all the listeners for continuing to support the show. Till next time, stay as awesome as you are.